What roles have you played in your life? Maybe it's the role of the quote-unquote good one, or the rebel, or the perfectionist. No matter what roles you have donned over the course of time, they each had a reason for existing. Universal symbols and archetypes are a language we all speak. They communicate not via words, but via energy, encoded into the collective conscious. In this episode, myself, Vicky, and Joe explore the world of archetypes and how we embody them in our daily lives, whether we are aware of it or not. We dive into this misconception of good versus bad archetypes and the true nature of these unique energies. We also share personal stories about the archetypal roles that we've played in the past and how each of us can utilize these roles in supportive ways, should we only choose to do so. I know that you have so much to share on this, Joe, and I want to start with basics, because archetypes are not like the primary front of mind conversation that I'm having in my own inner dialogue. And yet myself and everybody are working with our archetypes of every moment of every day. Depending on what we're doing, others will come out more dominant at times. And I want to distill down initially what archetypes are for our listeners and why I'm saying that.
So, I mean, like you said, archetypes exist, I mean, everywhere throughout our lives and what we kind of do, how we live, et cetera. So, I mean, just thinking about I'm not going to get into like the Jungian archetypes, because that's a whole other conversation in and of itself. But like, I mean, that plays into it as well, of what's the archetype of the good girl. So they're these sort of like characters almost that we step into that role, and that's how we play it out. So, you know, I mean, just sort of to connect on a deeper level, I mean, think about like when you're, you know, being the mom, and just kind of in our family archetypes, being the mom or being the sister or being the daughter, and how we walk out those roles in life, or how we behave based on what's expected of us.
How we perceive those roles or those archetypes, maybe what we've been told about those archetypes, like as a daughter, you must be this is what's expected of you, or as a mother, this is what's expected of you. So we have our own experience of our archetypal roles, our archetypes, subconsciously and consciously, right? And then we have that which we're taught to think about them, and we're told that we should identify as. So, I feel like this is going to be like nitty gritty. Where do you want to start with this?
Like, I don't even know. I guess what I want to say first and foremost is that like there's no quote unquote good or bad archetypes. I think it just is what it is, right? They all have their necessary role. Whether it's a genuine, true, conscious necessity or our subconscious necessity of whether it's secondary gain, or maybe we're not sure how to, you know, how to be genuinely courageous. And so we have to think about, well, what does that look like, and step into that role. And even though it might not be something that we tap into sort of inherently of our own accord, we're still able to do it. So I think that archetypes, I mean, they really are just these necessary roles that we traits even that we step into. So looking at it from that perspective, I think is one important thing, because I know that just, I mean, in society, or even from divination tools, right? Think about tarot, think about astrology, where there's these like quote unquote bad cards, right? The three of swords, or the tower, or the devil, or whatever. And really, there's this focus on their disruption and the way that they upset our lives. But there's not a lot of focus on the the totality and that sort of dualism that they bring to our lives as well, and how we can tap into those types of archetypal energy in a very supportive way. So breaking that down into it just is what it is, and we tap into these energies depending on what we need, right? I mean, I feel like that's kind of what it all comes down to in a lot of ways.
How can we harness the power of an archetypal shadow aspect just as much as we might tap into it in its proactive, constructive means? So with the idea of like, what would be the purpose of that? Is it total self-integration? Is it self-acceptance? Like, yes. And more specifically, why would we want to be more conscious about the archetypal characters that play out on the regular or on the occasion? And why have this conversation?
Yeah, that's a good question. because I mean, some people might be like, why are we even talking about this? So I think it's important for us to realize these things on a self-awareness level. But I think that even beyond that, it can change our dynamics, right? In our relationships, whether it's to ourselves or to others. So kind of keeping in the same, I'm going to tell a little story. I'll try to make it short. Like just an example, right? So keeping it in this sort of vein of like our family dynamics, right? I'm the asshole, hands down, 1000%. And my familial dynamic, right? And there's a reason for that. It isn't because I go out of my way to be a jerk. It's because I don't operate the same way that my immediate family does, because they're very emotionally driven and that's how they operate. And I do not. I am sort of the opposite. And that doesn't mean that like I don't have feelings or experience emotions. I just have a better grip on those things and don't react in the same way that they do. And so to them, it's this sort of, you're different from how we do things. And you know, for me, that's totally fine. That's never bothered me. I don't really care, but I do think that for some people, it does bother them, right? It does bother them to step into these roles or feel like they have to. There's this obligation to play the role of whatever. And so when we recognize that, then we can say, okay, well, now I get to make a choice. Do I want to continue to play the role? And maybe you do, right? Maybe you do. Or what do I want to step into instead? Or what do I want to figure out instead? Because that's going to help me determine where I go next. And, you know, our archetypal roles can also evolve. So I just think that recognizing where we do that, right? Because and like I said, it's a very necessary thing, because we're one person, or we behave in one way, maybe when we're at work, but we're going to behave in a very different way, maybe potentially, you know, when we're at home or with our friends or whatever. So there are these just natural separations and the way that we sort of compartmentalize our lives.
Identify with those compartments. Yeah. I resonate with your asshole of the family story. I am, yeah, like black sheep, I guess. I don't, maybe they might say asshole, but they've never said that to my face. But I'm different. Yeah, I don't even live in the same town. And I deliberately kind of moved away so that I wasn't a part of the family dynamics to the degree that I would have been if I'd stayed in that town. And whether I did that for my own self-expression reasons, like get out of the town that I was born in to see myself in another way, in another community, or whether I did it so that I didn't have to be so responsible for tending to family needs, maybe it's a lot of it. So I feel like maybe I identify myself as the outcast, the one who sets herself apart, the one who left the family. And that might not even be how they perceive me. So on any given day, I can identify as, oh, that makes me an asshole, or that makes me a freedom seeker. Maybe that makes me the free spirit. And I know my mom, if she was listening right now, she's like, you've always been our free spirit, darling. Like, we expected you to leave. We don't expect you to hang around doing stuff that we do, because that's not who you are. Likewise, when I see you as like identifying as the asshole who's more on their head than like buying into the emotional watery depths, I'm like, oh no, that's just because you've got a lot of major Aquarian stamps in your astrological natal chart. And that makes you seem more aloof or colder than other people. And I'm like, same, same. So isn't it interesting that I also identify archetypes within you? Like, I perceive you as that. And we might perceive ourselves as being something completely different. And I find it interesting that my mum might think I'm a free spirit, and that's all she sees of me. Yet, if I feel bad about having left the hometown, I make myself the villain in a sense, and that being a bad thing. And I'm like, wait a minute, let's reframe this. Like, what if the villain, commonly seen as the bad guy, is what I criticize myself about? That's not helpful. But if I can turn the villain into a powerful metaphor, who is the warrior, right? The freedom seeker, the one who appears as the villain but has this cause, is almost like the rebel with the cause. That's helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So talk to me about this perception of good and bad, and how we can take the villain archetype or even the victim archetype and make that work for us. Is that possible? I've heard you talk about this.
Yeah. Well, and it's so interesting because I feel like the conversation about the villainization in general is one that, I mean, we have before talked for such a long time about this, but isn't it interesting to kind of consider when we do that? When do we make ourselves the villain? And so that's a question to ask. When do I make myself the villain? When do I make others the villain? Like, what are the set of circumstances that has to happen? What are the boxes I need to tick in order to do one or the other, right? Or for any archetype for that matter. But when it comes to the villain, I think there's this sort of desire naturally, you know, to, whether we're making ourselves out as that or whether we're making others out as that, but to, I don't know how to explain it, like to distance, to want to separate from that versus acknowledging and accepting. And when I say accepting, I don't mean like, oh, well, that's just how I am and that's how it's going to be forever, right? Like, no, that's, you know, that's not acceptance, at least not in its true form. But to say, okay, this is how I feel about it right now. This is why I'm villainizing myself right now, or making myself out to be the villain. And that might be how I feel right now. But our feelings are transient by nature. So it's not going to be how I feel about myself in 10 minutes, maybe, or tomorrow. So remembering that there will be roles we fulfill, whether, you know, consciously or subconsciously, that we do, and maybe we feel shame about it, or maybe we, you know, we don't necessarily like to fulfill those roles, but they serve a purpose, whether it's the villain or whether it's the victim. And coming back to that secondary gain, just to kind of define what that means, because I know not everybody studied NLP, but secondary gain is essentially when we gain something that we view as positive from a situation that is unsupportive, or that is, you know, just sort of not the best way to go about something. So kind of thinking of it in a sense of this attention seeking, for example. Maybe I want to feel attention, and I'll use myself as an example. I want Jesse, my husband, to pay attention to me, and he's not doing it the way that I want him to, or as much as I want him to, or whatever, in the usual ways that I might go about, you know, asking him to spend more time with me, or let's go do this, or whatever. And so then I think, well, how else can I get attention from him? And so maybe I start doing things that I wouldn't normally do, or maybe I, you know, am, you know, sick a lot of the time, let's just say. And that, me being sick all the time, for example, means he's paying more attention to me. So I have a whole lot of incentive, right, at that point, to continue behaving in that way so that I get what I want. Is it the most positive and productive and supportive thing for our relationship? No, it is not, right? But recognizing that that's what I'm doing, I can then come to, again, to a point of saying, do I want to keep doing that? Why am I doing this? And then have the conversation or continue to behave in that way and receive my natural consequences. So yes, I think we can utilize those roles to our advantage 100%. Sorry, that was a really long-winded way of getting to the answer of your question. But there are definitely ways where we can utilize that to our advantage. And again, whether consciously or subconsciously, maybe we don't realize that we're doing that.
Exactly.
So yeah, totally.
I love that you went off on that tangent and gave us that example. There is sets of patterns, beliefs, programs that are either subconsciously running or like, we know that we're running them, but we're like ignoring and avoiding, not accepting it. But once we get to that acceptance of, oh, interesting, I keep sabotaging my own well-being to get attention. Interesting. So once you're aware of that, the self-awareness kicks in. We can accept that we might be playing the role of the sick person, the sick spouse, because of the secondary gain that we get from that. And then we get to say, attention. If I need attention, what archetype could I then spend time embodying that would give me the sensation of getting attention, right? Because maybe in your example, maybe Jesse's not going to be in the headspace, physical space to be able to provide that for you. So we can use archetypal characters to give us that experience for ourselves. Like, we can control that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do we always look at like polar opposites? Like, if I'm not the sick person, then I'm the healthy person. Like, what? No, maybe not. Like, we'd have to penetrate a little bit deeper, right? Like, why is it that I'm seeking attention? Continuing to use your example.
Yeah. And that's a really good point, is not necessarily going to the polar opposite, but sort of looking a little deeper and thinking, okay, well, like you said, why do I want the attention? For what purpose? Well, maybe I just really want to feel loved, or maybe I just want to feel heard, that, or whatever it is. And so from there, let's just say I can realize, instead of playing out this role of being sick in perpetuity so that I receive what I want, let me have a conversation with Venus. How can I enact appropriate and like supportive behaviors that are going to get me what I want in the way that I want it? And it doesn't always necessarily have to revolve around someone else, but what can I do at this point? So thinking from that place of what's the greater purpose, and then how can I fulfill that in a way that actually is supportive?
I love that. I love that you draw upon Venus. And for people who are listening who are like curious about the archetypal character of Venus, it is the celestial being that wants us to connect with people so that we can receive love, absolutely, but the meaningful connections that are available to us. Venus wants us to feel appreciated. Venus wants us to have the experience of being fully alive and feeling pleasure and having fun as well. So I'm speaking for the people who might not have associations to celestial beings and might not automatically think of a planetary ally as, maybe I can tap into Venus or Mars or Saturn to help me out with this one. Like, we don't have to know about archetypes to be able to access or resource something, right? So if I had no knowledge of planetary energies and I am the sixth spouse, I could then think about, what do I need? Love, all right. What's an archetypal character that I innately know, whether it's universal or not? Mm-hmm. Most archetypes, by the way, are universal, from like myths and legends and stories that we've all heard or collected perceptions of over our years of being alive. So if I'm thinking, if I need love, how about I just tap into the archetypal character of the lover? And that might not have to be in a sexual way, right? Like, they mean, maybe that's a community love provider.
Yeah.
And what would that look like? So I can start to talk to the lover as if it was something not yet of myself, because I might feel distanced from it, mm-hmm. having enacted the behavior of the sixth spouse for so long and not feeling that love. So if I can first initially see that character from an objective point of view, or a disassociated point of view rather, have a conversation, I can start to relate to it. And then I'm like, oh, I see how I am like you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you come to that realization of, oh, I am that. Yeah. Hello, lover, let me embody you. What does that look like? And then I start to practice and behave, take actions, make choices, operating from the character, i.e. the archetype of the lover. Things look different then.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a good point. You know, I mean, I'm drawing on the things that I know, right? So astrology, tarot, all that stuff, mm-hmm. but draw from literature. If you love mm-hmm. to read, think about your favorite characters, or even, you know, from TV or movies or whatever, you know, but think about those types of characters that embody that which you're sort of looking for. So that's a really good point of recognizing what, you know, what's the greater purpose and how can I get there, and tap into what you know already, because over time we realize that it's all just a reflection anyways. And I know that some people like might feel bad about that, because they're like, well, if that means that I see bad in the world, that means I'm bad. And no, right? Because it's all just sort of subjective when we talk about good or bad, because that means something different to literally everybody. And so being able to recognize again that there is this duality and this polarity, and that's what makes life interesting, right? If like, and I know I've said this before, but if it was all homogenous and there was no uncertainty and everything was the same and everyone said and thought and acted the same and felt the same all the time, like, things would be really boring. Mm-hmm. So by looking at, yes, where the ugly shit is that we don't want to look at and that we want to avoid, we come to know and love ourselves. And if we don't love ourselves, then we can work towards acceptance, right? We come to tolerance, neutrality, and then acceptance. And maybe we don't come to love and fully embrace, you know, certain parts of ourselves, But I think that that tolerance is definitely a great place to be when it comes to the things, again, that are more uncomfortable.
I have a story to share on tolerance.
Yeah.
Let's talk about spouses right now. My wife, G, is Aries rising and Aries moon. And there is so much fire and zest for life and like all through a china shop kind of energy often. And with that comes this fiery, sometimes rage, but it's like passion, right? So I can either feel, and there is a warrior spirit within her, like this, there is just a very huge presence of warrior spirit. And I can see myself often acting as the victim archetype who feels intimidated by that kind of surge of fire presence and this want things to be right, which the warrior naturally does. And I can see that as threatening and inappropriate behavior coming from my wife. I can see that as dysregulation, that I'm not safe being around that. Or I can view my wife with the language of archetypes and be like, wow, her warrior is on fire right now. Like there is a cause that G's really fighting for, and rage is present and there is anger in her heart, but it's not anger. It's like fierce love for rightness and for ambition and for to be in the world, to really feel it. Now, how two different experiences right there. I'm the observer of my warrior on fire, and it becomes a turn on them, right? Like, I want to be in this presence. I want to stand alongside this being because look where they're going and look what they represent. How like admirable is that? Or I can be like, oh, unsafe, scary, threatening. Like marriage looks totally different. So when we understand the language of the archetypes, we have opportunities to see things from many different perspectives.
Absolutely. And that's a great story. I mean, I think that really encompasses sort of that perception and really recognizing when we are sort of too much in the identification and like, well, this is happening to me right now. And when we can really look at this misunderstanding, right? So like, what if every villain is just a misunderstood yeah. person, right? I'm just talking theoretical here. Like, but I mean, consider just for a minute that, like I was saying before, the archetypal characters, these archetypal essences are necessary because they show us different things. So think about the devil, whether it's specifically in the Bible or in the tarot, right? And so I'm going to talk about this specifically in tarot, but in the devil card, right, it's the devil and there are those two people and they're like, they have chains around them, but they're not connected to anything. They could walk away whenever they want, but they stand there because they think, they perceive, I'm locked to this. And so the devil, we can, you know, again, coming back to this good or bad sort of a thing. And we typically see the devil as a bad quote unquote archetype, but the devil serves a purpose. A very deep purpose to remind us that we only tether ourselves to what we decide to tether ourselves to. And we have the free will and the opportunity at any moment to walk away or to change our perspective or to gain and extract wisdom we already have. We just need to become conscious of it. So our awareness of that and the purpose that those types of archetypes serve, I think is beneficial, because then we're not in this habit of, and this is, our subconscious works like this, right? Automatically to box things and label them and categorize them. That's just its literal function. So there is nothing wrong with that. It's what we're going to do naturally. But when we recognize that, we can then say, that's one perspective, but what's something else? Or what are the other possibilities? Just like in your example of, you know, your perception of G, and like, you can view her as this fierce warrior when she's, you know, in these moods, or you can see this as, this is not safe. It feels, you know, unstable or whatever. So it's all in flux, I think, because I think there will be moments where we are just, for whatever reason, unable to move into the other perspective. And that might be because we're under a lot of stress. Our nervous system is far beyond, you know, our capability to bring it back into regulation. We're too dysregulated.
So we might literally be unsafe as well. You know, like there are real life circumstances where fiery rage can be dangerous for an individual.
Not to bypass that. That's not an actual situation. Of course it is. Totally. But, you know, I'm just thinking as well of like when all this stuff was going on with Jesse and his PTSD and all of the things that he was remembering during that time, the way he was behaving was so different. And I was like, I was struggling to be able to manage my perceptions, and like, you know, would fall into one side or the other. It was such a volatile situation. I couldn't find a middle ground, you know, to be able to like navigate that from. And I think that's a possibility too, that we're really engrossed in something, or we're really deep into a situation where we're just not able to like zoom out far enough. That's just a matter of practice.
Heaps of practice. I used to make G wrong for having such outwardly expressed rage.
Really?
Right? Because of how I was brought up as a child, like my experience of my father was rage, mm-hmm. in the form of physical abuse and emotional abuse. So I equated rage to I'm unsafe.
Mm-hmm.
I made G wrong. And often she would say to me, often in rage, it's not wrong to be angry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Try and reprogram a 33-year-old thought of angry is wrong. That's hard. I'm going to be stuck on that. I'm going to be occupied with this belief of what she's doing is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So practice is one thing. Self-awareness is another. And we can read how to reprogram our subconscious in the textbook. We can study all the NLP we want. We can do the hypnosis. We can look at past life regression and progression, which, by the way, are all taboo tools and techniques. Like, we have all the tools and techniques available to us. Yeah. And it's worth nothing to us if it sits in our cognitive knowledge base,
mm-hmm.
not practiced and embodied. So I want to share what the realization was for me, where I really started to shift things, and it was identification with who I thought I was.
Interesting. Yeah.
How I identify myself. If I am always the one who is the victim of rage, there is no way I'd see anything from another perspective. I wouldn't be able to appreciate the warrior, fiery spirit in my wife, and not only tolerate that, but celebrate that. So identifying myself as this or that didn't help.
Hmm.
it was when I started to come into neutrality with all of them and have total self-integration and celebrate my shadow, celebrate my fears, celebrate even the subconscious programming that was sabotaging or detrimental to my well-being. It was then that I started to see perspectives, approach things from a different view. So total self-integration was my key to being able to work with all of this. What's your experience?
That's so true. I think it's something we maybe don't, and I wonder, I'm saying this without really knowing the full picture, but maybe it's total self-integration is not something that we like consciously think about on a regular basis, or like really even, maybe it's not even something that's entered our mind. So that's really fascinating to me. Because I think that for me, it was coming to the neutrality over and over and over again. And I think that was what was so in the times that have been really challenging and difficult. It was coming to this place of neutrality and having to remember to do that. And it was like, oh, these tools that I have, like, why was it so hard for me to access this stuff when it was happening? But again, it's just practice. And I think, to just be clear, and I know I've said this before, but it bears repeating, neutrality is not an absence of emotion or opinion or thoughts about things. It's about being the observer and being able to distance ourselves and not over identify into any one thing. It's just about, you know, like being the security camera up in the corner or having a bird's eye view over the situation, not directly involved in the situation, just watching it all play out. And there's nothing wrong with having a dissociated perspective, because it really does help us to remove, I think, a lot of the places where we go, where we tend to blame or put or label, or, you know, again, like sort of shove people or situations into these little boxes and say, this is what you are and that's all that you are. And that, on the same token, is what we do to ourselves. So if we're capable of doing it to others, we're absolutely 1000% doing it to ourselves. So like you said, recognizing how you self-identify and the roles or the boxes or the archetypes that you had been embodying up to that point, creating the awareness and then stepping back, right? And it's a gradual process. Like I don't think that this is always an easy thing to do. You know, for some people it might come naturally, for others I think it's one step at a time. And then
it might even be archetypes that can help us with that too, right? Like I'm thinking of one of the furthest planetary friends that we have, like Uranus is out there, or Pluto. It's like, hey, Pluto. Pluto doesn't give a shit about how anyone identifies itself. It's just like do you? And Uranus is like, yeah, do you, boo. There is, I don't know, having them out there doing their own thing, I think, is sometimes the tether that I go out to when I get too self-identified with archetypes that are sabotaging my well-being, or if I am getting too attached to labels that other people put on me or I put on myself. So it's so funny, because you and I have like personal relationships with the planets, and a lot of our intuitive inner dialogue is like with them chatting in our intuitive faculties. So I can't help but feel Venus like putting up her hands now. Mercury's like, don't miss out on me. Jupiter's like, you can't miss me. Like, let's all have this conversation. And each of them encourage us to, yes, dissociate, but not for the purpose of bypassing emotion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Or uncomfortable thoughts and sensations. They're actually saying, just take note, what are you feeling right now? What sensations are happening for you? Yep. And Jupiter would be like, how big do you feel your aura, Vicky? Saturn's like, can you feel the boundaries? I'm like, yeah. Mercury's like, look at all the different facets of you. Because like Mercury's full of all the beautiful nutrients, like every nutrient, trace mineral, element you can possibly imagine, it's all on Mercury. So there's so many facets to it. If we can simply put aside time to carve out the space to look at ourselves, what am I sensing? How am I feeling right now? Not getting caught up in it, but just for the purpose of letting someone know, like, okay, Venus, I get it. My heart feels a little bit perturbed. Mm-hmm. Just by sharing with one of our archetypal characters how we're feeling helps us to disassociate from it. If there is any one conversation that I have in my head that helps me get out of that moment where I'm judging something as bad, mm-hmm. when I am shunning my shadow because it's uncomfortable or it's not allowed, mm-hmm. my archetypal friends, whether I feel like I am them or I'm not quite connected to them and they're out there somewhere, they feel like my rescue remedy. They feel like my tether to rationality, to home-based frequency. They bring me home to self and what really matters.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tool that each of us know we already have. And I want to invite our listeners to just simply question, what do you go to in those times where it's difficult to access all the tools and techniques? What's your, from where do you draw that first initial strength inside of you or outside? What's your tether? What brings you home just that little bit? What soothes you? As you're coming back to your heart, there'll be something, whether it's a tool or technique or not. It might be an object in your home.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's a great question. Because it's so different for everybody. For some people, it might be prayer and that receptivity of guidance from that realm, or it might be meditation for others. And I think that there's no one way. Everyone is going to have their very own unique way of coming to that place and accessing that information, or finding that tether. So I would definitely love to hear everyone's answers. Hop over into the Taboo Insider Telegram group and let us know so we can keep the conversation going, because that's interesting to me anyways. Absolutely. I like to hear this. Yeah.
I'm just thinking of the example of my dogs. There is an archetypal canine healer that I'm tapping into when I'm cuddling Zach or Zara. Mm. Right? Like, yes, it's Zach and Zara, and it's also every canine spirit that exists, including all the mythological, like, ancestral canines who ever existed. We're like dog mamas. Joe has Squig and Fox tail, by the way, and Zach and Zara are my canine children. There is an archetypal strength that I'm drawing upon when I'm cuddling them. So there gives the audience another example as well. It doesn't have to be deity, goddess, seasonal. It doesn't have to be a Jungian archetype. It can be anything that you see being an archetype. Even the seasons represent archetypes for me.
Totally. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be out there like planetary stuff.
Yeah.
In saying that though, Joe and I do play with archetypal celestial characters a lot. And that's actually what we've primarily based our upcoming group program on. We play with the five primary celestial beings. And you'll be seeing a lot of that on social media. But yeah, conversations happening inside the Telegram Insiders group. that's where we want to hear of what archetypes show up for you on the regular. What are those not so regular ones that occasionally pop up that you're like, oh, put that down, back in the cupboard, shelve that away. And can we help you like celebrate and acknowledge that that's not a bad thing necessarily? We can learn to work with the archetypes that don't look so pretty or don't feel so comfortable all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we love to keep the conversation flowing. And it's definitely this type of archetypal metaphysical experience that we facilitate, not only in, you know, our upcoming workshop in our program, but I mean, in so many different ways we've done this, and you know, our students always love these types of journeys, but it really is sort of what I think sets Taboo apart, is that it's not just about learning about the archetypes and, you know, we're conceptualizing these things or intellectualizing them. We're actually having our own experience. And that is very unique, you know, to us as individuals when we do have those experiences, because I think it's also really easy to take someone else's interpretation or someone else's experience with a particular archetypal energy or even in a certain circumstance or situation and want to apply it to us, but we're not them. And we have our own unique experience of energetics in general, I think, right? Everything is energy. So we are constantly having our own, you know, experience with the energies around us. So I think that's really, like I said, what sets us apart and how much our students or even our workshop participants in the past have really, why they have loved the experience so much is because it is so individualized. And so, you know, it's exciting to sort of hear everyone's perspective and hear what people take away and what their experience has been up until that point and then what shifted after. So we would love to continue on the conversation. We would also love to see you at the Make Your Mark workshop if you're coming to that, which is happening in a couple of weeks as of now, on February 1st. So, yeah.
Thank you so much for tuning in, everyone. And thank you, Joe, for sharing your perspective on archetypal acceptance and celebration, let's say, making them work for us rather than against us. There is great healing that has taken place for myself just having had this conversation. So thank you for opening it up and being willing to continue it on. We'll see you all inside the Insiders Group Telegram. Make sure you're there. Show notes have got all the links, and we will see you on the next episode. Thank you, and bye, everyone.